Hey everybody, we are joined today by longtime friend of the show, my buddy Justin, and he is also the host of his own podcast. He's interviewed a number of people in the crypto world over the years, I guess the most notable being the late John McAfee. Thank you for joining us, Justin, to give us some updates and thoughts on what may have happened this past week, right? There is, you know, allegations being thrown around that BlackRock, which is one of the largest investment managers in the world, one of the largest fund managers, allegedly did some kind of deal involving Bitcoin that caused one of the stable coins to like crater. And so I was hoping you could walk us through that and just your general thoughts on stuff at the moment.
Hey David, nice to be back on the show. And yeah, a lot did happen this past week, and probably many weeks leading up to the last week, kind of crescendoed. What you just explained briefly is the alleged implication of what happened behind the scenes. But then there's another narrative going on in like sites like CoinDesk and MSN and those outlets, where they're just simply stating that there were some issues and it went to zero briefly, but it's been about three days now since it's lost about 99.9% of its value. And I'm talking about Luna, which is marketed as a stablecoin attached to the UST.
Let's backtrack for a second. So there's this thing called Luna, which as of a couple weeks ago, it was like the fourth or fifth biggest crypto asset by value, right? And
yeah.
I frankly don't know much about it, but if you can just briefly tell people what it tries to do and why people are using it.
Well, it's a stable coin. People are going there, whether it's institutional money or retail or just private investors, they go there to try to, in an attempt to hold their value, right? Because especially in the market conditions right now, with what's going on in the world, most people with money are trying to hold that value, right? But instead of just staying in the Bitcoin, they were trying to take advantage of what Luna was offering, which was just ridiculous Celsius-esque type of returns, right? So in a nutshell, without getting too arcane, people will hold their Bitcoin in this stable coin, and then they would yield back 20% over the year of their value just by holding their value in that coin. And theoretically, on paper, they are able to reap those rewards with no issues. But of course, there were issues, right? Because when you have everybody taking their money out at the same time, for whatever reason, and this is where the narrative falls apart, they kind of gloss over this. Well, things will just go to zero if it's poorly regulated and poorly managed. Mm-hmm. And they're trying, what MSN and all these other outlets are saying, and I'm not trying to throw them under the bus, but this is what they're saying. It's kind of like a cover. They're being very vague about what really happened. Now, what you mentioned before about BlackRock, that was something that a lot of people in public are walking back, but you can see it clearly, and it's all been reported in the blockchain. So BlackRock and Citadel, like you said, they borrowed $100K in Bitcoin, not $100,000, $100,000 in Bitcoins from Gemini, right? The one of the largest exchanges in North America. And Gemini has come out and flatly denied this, but it's in the books. So they borrow 100K Bitcoin, they swap out 25,000 of that into U.S. Tether, and, you know, in quiet anticipation of this attack, they dumped it using the Luna protocol, okay? So they called up the head of the Terra Foundation, which is basically Terra, and are you familiar with Terra and Luna and what they are?
No, all I really know is that they're stable coins. I haven't looked into them much beyond that.
Okay, well,
and in fact, like, just to pause here for a second, because this is all so much information.
Yeah, it's a lot of info.
Years ago, when I first looked into stable coins, I never understood the point. Because if you're in crypto, presumably you want to be in something that's not tied to the dollar. And yet the kind of Sisyphean task of these stable coins is to peg themselves to the dollar perfectly, which seems like it's just like totally setting itself up for failure, because you're doing something that's, you know, Icarus-like. You're climbing too close to that Federal Reserve sun. And even if you could pull it off, like, the establishment's not going to like that long term. If you can invent a sock, you know, a sock that represents the dollar perfectly but isn't the dollar. The reason why they tolerate Bitcoin is that ultimately it's not tied to anything. It could go to zero. It could go to a million.
Yeah, exactly. And you're hitting the nail on the head. What? Why have stablecoins? Well, I don't. If you were following Satoshi way back in the day, and I'm not talking about the white paper, I'm talking about when he was actively posting in the Bitcoin talk forums. He was talking about sometime in the future, like some sort of intermediary. I guess what he's describing is a stablecoin, where big institutional investors are trying to extract as much value from the Bitcoin itself without actually having bought all the Bitcoin, right? Because again, institutional money, I believe we talked about this like 5-6 years ago, institutional money, we were anticipating them coming in with these big bags of money, but they have, but then they've also tried to hide, like take everyone else's value with them, right? And again, there's a lot of sell pressure the past 6 months, basically. There's been all this sell pressure from these institutions. And the only people who really believe in Bitcoin itself are the retail investors. And they're opting out of this dollar system. They're the true believers. But, of course, they have less money on this side compared to the institutions. The institutions are just trying to hedge against this bad economy. You see the same thing happening in the housing market, right? Mm-hmm. $200,000 homes are suddenly $550,000, almost upwards of a million, right? And who's buying and selling those homes? It's not regular people like families. It's just these institutions who are just trying to stay afloat in this, what's going to be a really bad, in my estimation, probably some sort of depression. And it's going to get real bad, especially in densely urban areas.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, anyway, this Duquan, this Terra Foundation, right, is headed by this Duquan guy. And so, allegedly, BlackRock and Citadel operatives, I'm not going to call them traders because they're not really trading, right? They were in contact with this Terra Foundation guy, and he said, hey, we want to sell all this Bitcoin for U.S. Tether. But they also mentioned that it was too large of a trade and they didn't want to move the market. So they offered, if he would like to buy their 25,000 Bitcoin at a discount.
So how does this Terra guy, how does he tie in with Luna?
You know, well, he's supposed to be part of the Terra Foundation, so he's in charge of like marketing and basically getting more people to use the protocol, right? That, like, same thing what the Bitcoin Foundation is supposed to do, right? They're supposed to just support in public and market and deal with all the, I guess for lack of a better word, customer service, I guess, without the technical aspect. So he's just in charge of that part. And it's unclear whether it's, again, this is all information that came out literally within 24 hours of everything happening, right? So some of this could be rumor. There's a lot of deleted tweets. There's a lot of people walking back certain things that they claimed. But it's pretty clear when you look at BlackRock and Citadel and what they dipped their toes in. It's pretty clear that this was, some people are calling it a Ponzi scheme. Some people are saying there's some level of collusion here. So anyway, they sell this Bitcoin at a discount for UST. So essentially, this guy took the bait. He gave them a huge chunk of UST and lowered liquidity significantly. And then BlackRock and Citadel, they dumped all their Bitcoin. And what happens after that? It triggers a cascading event. Everybody starts selling in both assets, UST and in Luna. And then, you know, that 20% staking API should be a red flag for most people. 20% in a year, that is just insane. Like, how is that being backed up?
Right.
So this just lets you know the mentality of people right now. Not just like regular people, but just of these, they're predatory, these institutions, essentially, right? But you know what, David? I think a discussion needs to be had. This is, again, trade. Is it illegal to trade like this? I think people should be more judicious. And obviously, this is a scumbag mood on their part. They're going to buy back your Bitcoin cheaply now because...
Well, that was my next question. So if this allegation is true, after this trade went down or this, this kind of heist, whatever you want to call it, after they execute this, do they walk away with Bitcoin or are they just rich in fiat from this?
They're definitely rich in fiat, but I have to assume that they know what's on the horizon, and staying in dollars does not seem like the smart move. But again, it is market manipulation for sure. But it's not because it's, but it doesn't make crypto bad, right? That's the other thing. David, we've been around for so long. Collapse of Silk Road, Mt. Gox, remember MintPal, BitConnect, all of these collapses. The old guard, we're unfazed about this, right? Because we understand that the protocol is just going to keep chugging along. It's all this, like, auxiliary outside noise that just gives us all a bad name. So a lot of newer people in the space, they're just throwing their hands up and they think this is just all bullshit Ponzi. And that's the problem, right? I think from one of our very early interviews back when we were still in the West Coast, we were talking about something like this. We were talking about how there's going to be a lot of speculators, there's going to be a lot of bad actors, and a lot of people are going to, in the early days, are going to associate it with just underground shit. So...
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that because I've noticed like a pretty anti-crypto sentiment among young people on TikTok and even on Twitter, and they just kind of regard it as a scam, even though it's potentially the only life raft, you know, on the oceans at the moment. And I didn't really get involved with crypto as early on as you did because I was just interviewing people. So I was never, you know, a customer at Mt. Gox or anything like that. But certainly it seems like if you had told somebody several years ago, like even right before the pandemic started in 2019, that BlackRock would be buying or loaning or whatever, 100,000 Bitcoin to structure some trade, the largest fund manager in the world would be playing with that amount of Bitcoin. And if you were to tell me that there are three ETFs trading in the U.S. that are SEC approved, you know, one on the NASDAQ, one on the New York Stock Exchange, and I think one in Chicago. So if you were to tell this person back in 2019 all this stuff, they would think, wow, crypto must be doing great. It must have really come in, you know. And yet it feels like for whatever reason, things are in a precarious place. And every time there's some collapse, like this Luna collapse, even though it doesn't touch Bitcoin, young people see it on TikTok and they think it's a scam.
Yep. And you have to think, what do you think it's just the haves, the people with like these VC people who all have their own relationships with each other? You have to wonder if like, are they just trying to demoralize like poor people into not turning toward crypto? Because crypto is the door out of this system. The space needs more ethical builders with principles, right? Just like how it started. And some of these new guys, they think, like Luna is a great example. They were under the false impression that the first to market is the best, but it should be the other way around. It should be the best to market. Should be the first to rise, right? So the fact of the matter is that the trying to take away these life rafts. I mean, whether consciously or unconsciously, that's what's happening. These life rafts and the perceived integrity of these life rafts, that is crypto, it's just fading away into non-existence because of shit like this going on, right? The point of crypto is to restore or provide some sort of trust, stability, credibility into the world money system, right? But this is why I'm so critical of like the mainstream outlets, because they're just, you know, either FOMO or FUD, you know, that's the agenda for them. And the FUD, especially now with a lot of desperate young people, like supply chains, all that stuff are being threatened these days, which is something that I would have never thought like even 5 years ago. But yeah, like it sucks for them and it's giving them a bad name. Now, let's look at, there was another thing that leaked a few days ago, was a partial list of these Luna backers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's an exhaustive list, but then some names that come out, Coinbase Ventures, Binance, Arrington, XRP Capital, QOB. Remember this guy, Mike Novogratz? This guy, I think it was at Bitcoin Miami or a different, maybe a different convention this year. He was bragging about how most of his net worth is in Bitcoin and Luna, and that he was getting a Luna and Bitcoin tattoo on his back. And it's just like guys like this, and Novogratz has been, he's a known VC guy for decades, you know, and before that he was a Goldman Sachs guy. And to have a guy like this do some amateur shit
tattooing himself with his shitcoin.
Yeah, I just feel like, do you lose touch once you become so elite or have a certain amount of money that you just don't understand like optics? Dude, I don't know. And here's another one, Kakao Ventures, which is like I don't know if their parent company is a Chinese company, but I know in Japan and Korea, Kakao is like a huge thing. Polychain, Skynet Trading, TokenZ, TransLink Capital, all these guys, all these institutions, these are like millions and millions, billions of dollars, you know? All in Luna? David, did you hear about Luna 3 years ago?
No. I mean, I barely even heard about it before this collapse. So it's amazing that it was, you know, the fourth or fifth biggest crypto asset when it's something that nobody was talking about, at least in my little circle.
Some VC guy was talking about it just in passing, you know? Oh, yeah, I have a little bit in Luna. Hey, 20%. David, 20% yield in 1 year. That's just, can I ask you something? How come that doesn't set red flags in people?
Well, it really should. I saw the other day a crypto lender that used to offer rates like that. So this crypto lender has been banned by the SEC from doing business in the US. And yet just the other day I was on a blockchain explorer and I wasn't behind a VPN or anything, right? I was just, you know, US IP address. And right at the top of the site, it's showing me ads for this lender still, this DeFi lender. And it's saying, you know, drop in your Bitcoin now for a guaranteed 8% APY or something. I'm thinking, how can they do that? How can they insure my crypto? And on top of that, offer 8%, because, you know, that's, no bank can do that.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, there are some other services, quote, services offering that, like Celsius is one. There was another one that screwed you over personally, right?
Well,
I don't even remember their name.
This was an ad for Nexo, which is, yeah, the lender that, in my opinion, screwed me over, you know, from my perspective. And but certainly it's the Wild West is these DeFi platforms. And you're right, the red flag should be the 20% APY or whatever it is. How can you offer that? Even Bitcoin, you're not guaranteed to make anything. It's all risk-based. It's all, if demand increases in this rare thing, then you can do well. But if demand decreases in this rare thing, you can do poorly, you know? So I've got to end this one in a second, but just any final thoughts, please share.
I just want to Yeah, I just want to clear up because I feel like I just shotgunned you with so much info that happened the past few days. I just want to make it clear to the listener that these institutional investors, okay, they're being run by these managers, all right? And their mandate right now is they need to find a way to push 10 to 15% returns on their investment on top of what's inflation now? From the past year, like almost 20% or something like that?
Yeah, so, yeah, and basic food supply, it's like 15-18%.
Right. So all of it, like the fact that they have to meet those numbers, and you know those types of guys, they need to, they will do whatever is necessary to get to hit those numbers. It's going to lead to shenanigans. And I think this is just one. There's probably going to be a few more in the future. And the good name of crypto is going to be further muddied because a lot of people are going to get the wrong idea that, oh, people just seem to lose their money whenever they put their value in here. I'll just stick with dollars. Meanwhile, the dollar is going the way of Weimar Germany, you know, where people are just going to have bucketfuls of that around the house and barely buy like produce, you know. So
right.
I just wanted to make that clear that there's a lot of pressure for these institutions to sell, and they're going to do whatever it is that they need to do to meet those numbers, and a lot of people are going to get screwed over.
All right. Well, thanks for explaining all this, Justin. Definitely a lot of info. People might have to listen a couple of times, but you know, it's fascinating that this all allegedly went down. You got the world's largest fund manager playing around with Bitcoin to try to shatter a stable coin and make money on it. So different world from a couple years ago for sure. And these people using the tools that we believe in, they don't believe in them, you know? Like these fund managers you're talking about, these Goldman Sachs guys, to them success is having more dollars, period. There's no room for, you know, what if an alternate economy takes off? It's just having more dollars. That's what they see as a win.
100%. That's basically the mindset right there.
Yep.
So everybody's got to be careful. These new decentralized finance protocols and crypto in general, like Satoshi said, there's going to be growing pains like this. And it's a massive attack surface from hackers and traders. So that's the best place to find security exploits is between these regular retail traders and then these institutional guys. So anyway, maybe we could have like a part two of this down the road because I don't think this is over. I think there's going to be a chain of events leading to something ridiculous, and I don't want that to happen. So I don't know. I don't know what these institutions have in store. All I know is that pretty soon they're going to have the lion's share of the supply of Bitcoin specifically.
Wow. Yeah, we'll have to do a part two in a few weeks or maybe a month from now. And it's clear to me that big institutions like Fidelity aren't giving up on crypto, even though some people in the Senate are saying they're not fond of Fidelity adding it as a 401k option. It's the fact they're even saying they want to do that means they're taking it seriously.
Absolutely. Because again, the underlying protocol, nothing's wrong with it. It's actually like Satoshi like created something magical almost, right? But people there's so much shit in the water that people can't see what that it works. And it's still going to continue to work. I mean, Bitcoin doesn't take days off. And there's a reason why that Bitcoin is still the premier protocol that people use, and a lot of it has to do with it being the first, but also, you know, you don't hear about shit like this with Bitcoin. There's no 20% yearly yield of Bitcoin when you use the one of the wallets that they have. It doesn't really matter what wallet you use. It just depends. It depends. It all depends on how you view crypto and what your goals are. Because right now, there's a lot of people who are struggling right now, and they have dollars, but they can't buy shit with it. So the last thing that people want is to be turned away from crypto. So.
Right. All right. Well, thanks again, Justin, and I'll put your links in the show description so people can follow your show.
Thanks, man.
Yep.